Special attention was given to the teaching of art and culture, and district officials were provided with comprehensive training to enable them to support schools. This program also deals with inclusive education. The construction work had started on 6 full-service schools that would serve as a model. Tender for the provision of material resources and other assistive devices had been awarded. A very important instrument in managing inclusive education and the correct and proper and early identification of learners with special education needs is a screening tool. And so the screening, identification, assessment, and support strategy, abbreviated as SEAS, had already started. And then special schools, guidelines for special schools were developed. In terms of the implementation of the National Framework on Teacher Education and Development, the Fuzan Lushaka program for 2008 was developed, and discussions were held with higher education institutions. Approximately 5,000 bursaries were allocated to all HEIs since April 2007. The outputs from Fuzan Lushaka slow initially because, remember, we were dealing with Fuzan Lushaka coming into stream in 2007, that these were still pipeline students. So as we go on, that 5,000 are likely to begin to come out of the system. So we did place 421 qualified educators. The other important initiative, a key policy thrust, was the continuing professional teacher development. And the work between the Department of Education and SAFE is continuing in regard to developing an implementation system. And a pilot is underway already this year. A pilot was planned in 2007 for this year. And then also collaboration with higher education institutions in terms of offering advanced certificates in education. If I then move to the next page, we deal with district development. A revised policy was presented to HEDCOM. This exercise proved to be more complex than anticipated. Norms for districts were planned for 2008. We have made a budget bit to be able to deal with doing an organizational study. In other words, what is the role and responsibility of circuit managers? What's the role and responsibility of subject advisors? How many do we require in each particular district? And what must they do on a day-to-day basis in supporting quality education? School management and governance is another area where, again, there was a development of advanced certificate in education, school leadership, and work with higher education institutions to offer them, because at the point in time where these qualifications had to become a prerequisite for the appointment as a principal. And finally, quality promotion and assurance is another area under this particular program. In order to establish a baseline for monitoring performance on learner in terms of literacy and numeracy, data was collected from more than 80,000 learners in approximately 3,000 primary schools. The information included assessments carried out in school samples for the foundation phase, systemic evaluation in SECMEC 3. A self-evaluation guide was developed to assist schools to develop and implement school improvement plans. So in other words, how do they measure themselves in terms of learner performance, and how do they develop plans? The Foundations for Learning campaign was also gazetted in this financial year and was launched on 18th of March. A National Steering Committee was established. The campaign provides clear directives to schools and teachers. And Chair, I must indicate that this campaign has really caught the minds of educators themselves. And teacher unions have a terms of ensuring that this campaign is successful. They're putting their own resources, teacher unions are putting their own resources in place to begin to train educators to ensure the success of the Foundations for Learning campaign. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We then move to page 33, the further education and training responsibilities of the department. And I think we're going to start with enhanced participation and performance in grades 10, 11, and 12 in mathematics, science, and technology. And here we want to perhaps center our presentation around the 500 at Dinaledi School. And I think it's important to note that although the Dinaledi schools are, can I say, normal schools in provinces, provincial responsibilities around school, we do from a national level interact sharply with these schools and even do more than what we normally do in schools. And some of the things to be mentioned is that, for example, mathematics and physical science textbooks were purchased and distributed where there were shortages provided for in the provinces. There was even a second order for additional grade 12 mathematical literacy, physical science, and English textbooks that were delivered to the 500 Dinaledi schools. Then for grades 10 to 12, mathematics and mathematical literacy, there were exemplar papers compiled at a national level and provided to the schools and to the learners. 1,900 scientific calculators were purchased and provided to the schools. 2,400 of the maths teachers were given specific content training. 114 of the schools were monitored specifically through visits and reports compiled. Also, external monitors were appointed and trained to visit a further 200 such schools during 2008. Then a framework for adopter school. This is an interesting initiative where we actually went out to private enterprise and to companies to say, are you prepared to adopt a school and interact much more closely with these schools and also provide additional assistance? 276 of the 500 Dinaledi schools were adopted by the end of the reporting period. And then the last thing around them, an agreement to enroll 68,000 learners to participate in the Mathematics Olympiad in 2008 was signed with the South African Mathematics Foundation. The next area under this program is the improved quality of learning and teaching in schools through curriculum transformation. That concerned mainly the updating of all NCS documents supporting teaching and assessment. In the alias screening of grades 10, 11, and 12 textbooks, that was done at the national level and the best books identified, and therefore a catalog in that regard issued to the provinces and the schools. Subject advisors for ICT, technology, mathematics, and mathematical literacy were trained. And then there was also a newspaper supplement, the so-called Study Mate, and it continued being published in 2008 to support learners in grades 11 and 12. In life orientation, grade 11 teacher guides and learner books were distributed to March in 2008, and Northwest University was sourced to train subject advisors in physical education. Support for curriculum implementation through the use of ICTs. A redesigned user-friendly so-called Tutong website was launched in March 2008. And what is very interesting is that by that date there were 22,600 educational resources on that site, and the site was visited during the year by 310,000 people. KPMG completed the first draft of the options analysis of the feasibility study on e-education for implementation, and then discussions regarding ICT connectivity in the 500 Denaleri schools were initiated through the Department of Communication. Then page 36 firstly speaks to the National Recovery Plan, Honourable Chairperson, and that emanated from the labour action in 2007 during the salary negotiations, and the fact that schooling did not take place for a considerable period of time. Now, to assist schools and provinces in that regard, the department spent about 200 million rand on advocacy campaigns, special tuition and provision of learner support materials, such as mathematics study guides, English, Afrikaans and mathematics textbooks, and again a study by a made supplement in certain newspapers. And we are quite convinced that the recovery plan contributed to the increased number of passes. And I'm choosing my words carefully by saying increased number of passes and not saying increased percentage of passes during 2007. We also have increased learner participation, retention and throughput rates in FET colleges. Youth and democracy campaigns were completed in all provinces. A desktop audit of student support services was finalized. Best practices on student support services was presented. Student support services project was developed and piloted in 8 colleges, and media advertisements were issued and pamphlets on FET bursaries were printed and distributed. We then say support for FET colleges to offer a vocational program. I think it's important to say that during this period, 2006-07, I think it was the first time that the college's expenditures increased to 100% by the end of the financial year. They literally spent all their funds, and this, of course, is on the programs. We're not speaking about the recapitalization funds yet. The connectivity project to get all the colleges connected electronically was initiated in KwaZulu-Natal during this year, and this year being put forward in other provinces as well. And enrollment targets reached 62,000 in 2008. Improved qualifications and programs offered in FET colleges. Level 3 and 4 program documents were posted on the Stutong website. 1,500 level 3 lecturers were trained, and textbook catalogues were also finalised for FET colleges. The framework for NQF level 5 qualification was completed, and then the curriculum writers appointed, and FET college lecturers were trained by DOE and the CETA. Development of an integrated planning and funding system that supports delivery of national goals. Provinces were provided with the findings of the efficiency report. Distribution of information on the funding norms to provinces took place. The financial task team was informed to advise where additional funds were required to bridge the shift from the N123456 to the national certificate vocational, and bids were received for MSS software, and provinces were informed of the budgetary implications of the national certificate vocational. Regulated private FET colleges were regulated. The regulations were published and gazetted, or let me say published through government gazette. The National Register for FET private FET colleges was compiled and posted on the department's website. Forms and guides were published in separate gazettes to assist private FET colleges that want to register. And there was also a campaign, an awareness campaign over the radio and so forth to make private providers aware of the regulation. If we then look at the credit suitable assessment and quality practices in high schools and colleges, examinations for the senior certificate, ABET, general studies, natural studies, and level 2 national certificate vocational were successfully conducted in 2007. Examiners for the new national senior certificate were trained. Grade 12 exemplars were distributed to provinces and posted on a DOE website. About 102 underperforming schools were visited in 2007, and those were very specific targeted schools. Some of these schools that had a zero pass rate for grade 12 and so forth. And then again, exemplars for level 2 were distributed to provinces. Honorable Chairperson, I then hand over to Ms. Mbedele to speak about Program 5, page 41.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and morning to the members of the committee. Program 5 is Social and School Enrichment Program. It's listed here under its old name, Quality Promotion and Development. So I don't recognize the name. The first program under Social and Enrichment Programs is supporting schools that experience high levels of crime and violence to be safe and caring schools. Members of the committee will recall that in 2007, provinces were requested to identify 65 schools per province that were experiencing high levels of crime and violence. And the total number added to 585 schools. And as a result of that list, we conducted an audit, which we did jointly with the Center for Justice and Crime Prevention, that looked at each of the schools, the nature of the crime, and the problems that each of the schools are experiencing. And we then drafted programs that would respond specifically to those incidences. The second project of the Safe Schools was that the minister then identified one school per province, the 9 schools, which she sourced resources for and implemented programs in those schools. We have finalized implementation in those schools. We've put infrastructure, fences, CCTVs. We've conducted training programs for management, both for the 9 schools, but also for the 585 schools. We conducted youth camps with schools from the 585 schools, and the camps were really looking at positive values, and we're doing that with citizenship, my project citizenship. And it's a program that's ongoing, and it's proven to be successful. Also with the Center for Justice and Crime Prevention, we designed a program called Kaiseda Early Warning System, which is currently being implemented in all the provinces with positive results. The second program is targeted at increasing the participation and success rates of girl learners in gateway subjects in higher grades. And the focus has really been primarily on removing the barriers that impede young girls from succeeding in the gateway subject in higher education. We collaborated with the National Youth Service and UMSOBOMVU to provide counseling services and career services directed at learners in community schools, and the planning and implementation of that program is currently underway. But we've had a number of programs that are aimed at dealing with issues of sexual harassment and gender-based violence in schools. We have a manual called Opening Our Eyes, which is currently being implemented. We had the training of master trainers, national master trainers in February, and they are implementing and we're monitoring the implementation thereof. We are in the process of drafting a gender equity plan, and the draft plan is with the minister currently. We also issued last year the measures for prevention of and management of learner pregnancy. We've complemented those measures with support programs for teachers, which we are currently publishing in the teacher publications, and they're called Generations. It's a series of programs that we're implementing jointly with teacher unions that are aimed to support the measures. And the guidelines for the prevention and management of of violence have also been implemented via the gender ratio. The third program is around adult education and the implementation of the mass literacy campaign. Members of the committee will recall that in 2007, in 2006, the minister announced the intention of the mass literacy campaign. The CEO started working in 2007, and 2007 was devoted to planning for the implementation of the mass literacy campaign. Again, members will know that the campaign is actually quite successful and has exceeded the initial numbers that we had planned for 2008. Parallel to that, the minister set up a ministerial committee to review the ABET system. The committee just submitted the report to the minister in two steps. That report will be converted into a green paper and will be published for comment. But we are looking at ways of dealing with a gap between the review and current implementation, and we've embarked on a writing process for level 2 materials so that there is no gap between curriculum and ABET. The third area is the implementation of school sports in schools. In 2007, we had a very difficult time around school sports. We had difficult relationships with the Department of Sports and Recreation. NACOC was, for all intents and purposes, not functioning. That matter has been turned around now, as committee members will note in the subsequent report. But during that time, we started a partnership with Dreamfields, which is a partnership aimed at providing dream beds to schools and building fields in schools that are in rural communities and in townships. With that program, we've already reached over 250 schools, and it's growing. It's an exciting program that we believe will deal with some of the issues around infrastructure and equipment in schools. The next program is supporting and strengthening curricular-driven HIV and AIDS activities through peer education. This is largely a health promotion area, and we're working closely with the Department of Health in implementing and promoting healthy lifestyles in schools. We have, as part of this unit, implemented ongoing programs. We call them Letting Below campaigns, which are campaigns that are directed at districts where we provide screening services ranging from eyesight to hearing, learning disabilities to learners. But we also provide other services like home affairs, where we provide birth certificates to learners that don't have birth certificates. Some of them register for grants. And it's been a successful program. We actually just did the Eastern Cape last month. And it's a rolling program, and we do different districts throughout the year. The second major program is around drug and substance abuse. We had, at the time of the report, we had drug abuse guidelines, which we distributed to schools and implemented programs, starting with the 585 schools, but going beyond. But subsequent to that, we have an act that looks at searching and testing, and we started training schools on how to conduct tests in that regard. We have drafted we issue schools with a health calendar each year so that we focus schools on healthy lifestyles and healthy choices. Just in addition, we together with the USAID, we've implemented peer education programs in four provinces: Free State, Mpumalanga, KZN, and the Northwest. We're looking to extend them to the rest of the province, because the evaluation that was done on those programs indicated that the program needs to be scaled up to support our caring and supporting families. In terms of the school nutrition program, The CFO has already indicated that at the time of the report, we were feeding 6 million learners and close to 18 million schools. And it's been successful, and the members will recall that the problem was in the Eastern Cape because of the forensic audit, and those problems are being resolved, and the province has moved to get new staff members and reconceptualize the program, and we're seeing very positive results. In last year, the program has grown substantially. And another part of the program is that we have seen an increase in the number of food gardens that are in place and are functioning in schools. We continue to collaborate with other government departments and other companies. Members will have read that GAME is in partnership with us and offering kitchens to some of our schools. And we have similar partnerships with other companies that complement the school nutrition program. We continue to monitor the program rigorously. The members will recall that we did have an evaluation conducted by the KPMG last year and implementing the recommendations thereof. Again, that evaluation indicated that the program, by and large, is being implemented very well, but they highlighted some of the gaps that the CFO spoke about, that some of the provinces are not reaching the required numbers, and those gaps have been addressed. Other programs in the unit include the rural education program. We now have a draft plan on rural education, which addresses specific issues that are related to rural and farm schools. And as a result of that, we have draft guidelines on measures and closures of schools and are looking at some of the best practices from the different provinces that have implemented some of the initiatives, like the coastal strategies in the Western Cape and the Northwest, and we're sharing them with the rest of the provinces for implementation. We're working with UCT around multi-grade teaching, and again, it's something that we looking to implement in all of the provinces. As part of our recent village program, we continue to provide flags in schools and national symbols. I have to say that in some instances, the flags, the poles are stolen the following week. So it's always a challenge to find mechanisms of ensuring that those flags that are being put in schools are implemented. This is a protected. This is a program that we're doing with the Department of Arts and Culture, and it's being largely funded by Arts and Culture. So we implement as we get resources from them. But as members will know, every year we publish a book on anniversaries. During 2007, it was Footprints, and it's published in a way that schools can utilize it to learn about the key anniversaries in South Africa and to complement the My Country South Africa book. I've got the Stephen Biko booklet, which we did as a result of the exhibition. So we turned the exhibition into a book with activities for schools, so that it's not just an exhibition that people view, and we'll do that with all the exhibitions. The one that we currently have now is the Nelson Mandela exhibition, and we'll do a similar process so that schools are able to engage with the values that our heroes stood for. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. My colleague and I are going to present Program 6, which is higher education. That's on page 46. Let me preface our input by saying that the activities of the of Program 6 should be understood in terms of the three key functions which we perform as a branch. The first is the provision of support for delivery of key priority areas of the minister. Secondly, the monitoring of the performance of the system, and thirdly, the planning of the system in view of the future. Now, in terms of the provision of regulatory support for the higher education system, the branch has been busy with ensuring that the Higher Education Act and regulations and institutional statutes are aligned to legislation and policy. And in that regard, we have worked with a number of institutions to revise their institutional statutes to make sure that they are aligned to the Higher Education Act. And that entails, in some cases, going to the institution or those institutions coming to the department to discuss the revision of those of their statutes. Secondly, the grant was involved in the development of the NQF bill, which has recently been through this chamber. And thirdly, we were busy with the review and of the regulations for private higher education institutions, and that process is continuing, and we hope to finish to produce a draft at the end of this year. We further were responsible for providing an appropriate policy framework for programs and qualifications in higher education, and then in that regard, the approval of the PQM was important, and that was done in consultation with the institution. So I'm going to hand over to my colleague to pick up on the next.
In relation to our activity, which is providing academic and research support to the higher education system, we have three major committees that are reviewing the work and the disbursement of funds. This is the Research Development Committee, the Teaching Development Committee, as well as the Foundation Committee. And the purpose of these committees are to first do capacity building as well as performance enhancement. The works of all three committees are underway. And one of the key purposes was to develop a new allocation model for the ad hoc allocations from the funding formula.
We further work with institutions to make sure that appropriate policies for enhancing the research output of the higher education institutions is met. In that regard, we performed a number of visits. So, we conducted a number of visits to institutions to provide guidance and support to enhance the capacity of research offices in the institutions. And every year, institutions present their research reports to the department, and those particular reports are evaluated by the department in the formal basis on which we provide support to research offices of institutions. A task team was also appointed to draft policy and procedures for research development grants, which was alluded to earlier on. And another important work that was conducted last year was the policy on the HUKF, which was approved and signed by the minister in October 2007. And since then, the department has been busy with the preparation for the implementation of the HUKF, which comes into effect from 2009. Going to page 48. Provision of Institutional Support to Higher Education Institutions Act is more related to the support which provides to councils in the execution of their responsibilities. And in that regard, the branch has been able to produce training manuals for councils, which are used as a basis for induction of new members of council, but also to highlight to the council some of the responsibilities they are supposed to fulfill in terms of the Act. Furthermore, the Minister held a meeting with chairs of councils to raise some of the issues which councils need to pay attention to, and the basis for that particular meeting was the annual report which the institution submitted to the department. The department also worked closely with SRCs to assist them in terms of aligning their constitutions with a framework which has been produced for the SRCs, and we further conducted leadership training for various SRCs as reflected in the slide. Furthermore, we do support higher education institutions in managing the impact of HIV and AIDS. And in that regard, some service provider was contracted to assist with the efficient implementation of HIV/AIDS program, and that particular project is managed by HISA. And funds have been committed, and direct institutional grants have been processed. With regard to internationalization, on page 49, the branch is busy developing a policy framework for internationalization in higher education to ensure that we have a basis on which we undertake our internationalization activities in higher education. And furthermore, a comprehensive information database on international opportunities for higher education studies has been developed and is currently being refined.
One of the tasks that we have is to strengthen planning to enhance the production of quality graduates. We have been receiving reports regularly on student planning and output targets as achieved by the universities in our sector. Funds have been allocated and distributed according to the institution's infrastructure and development plans for the last financial year. We are currently on our next round of linking infrastructure development to enrollment planning to ensure that our system has the capacity for the growth of the system. We disbursed 250 million for the 2007-2008 financial year. Our annual report indicates that no work was undertaken in the previous year for the National Higher Education Information and Application Service. We're pleased to report that since then we have started work on trying to develop a model for a central application service. Priority has been given to the conclusion of student enrollment planning, and we are currently in the process of planning for the next cycle of student enrollment plans from the 23 institutions, as well as aligning that with infrastructure development.
Page 51, support of diversity in higher education takes two forms. The first is through the work, the establishment of the National Institutes for Higher Education, one which is based in Northern Cape, another one in Mpumalanga. I'm pleased to report that those institutions have been established with boards and staffing, and there are some partners that are working with those institutes in those provinces, and the department continues to provide support to those institutes. Secondly, diversity in higher education is supported also through the work of private institutions, which we do in terms of registration of those institutions, as well as monitoring their functioning. And the screening and evaluation of applications for registration is an ongoing activity of this particular process.
In relation to monitoring and evaluation of the higher education system in relation to equity, access, diversity, and output, we have developed performance measures, some of which are embedded in the National Plan for Higher Education. In support of that, we have produced one cohort analysis for 2001 first-time student entries, and these have been tracked through the system right up to 2006. We have just begun the follow-up study to that, tracking students right up to 2007 with the data that is available to us. We have worked on a framework for institutional performance indicators, and given the diversity of the institutions, we have been working closely with the different types of institutions to further develop these. The HEMIS database, which provides us with our higher education management information system, and which we receive reports 3 times in the year, we have expanded and we have modified to take into account changes in the higher education system. We have added new components which also take into account space data of institutions to ensure that we have up-to-date information so that one can balance the amount of available space as well as the number of students within a particular institution. We've refined the classification of subject matter document. This was finalized in August of this year and has been circulated to all the universities. The finalization of that will require some revisions to our higher education management database, and this is ongoing work.
Honourable Chairperson, I'll wrap up in 2 minutes. I think first of all, it's perhaps just important to note, we just rushed through a number of issues and touched on a number of issues, but to perhaps keep in mind that as the Department of Education, and let me say national in brackets, all these things we're trying to do and trying to influence in the system and out there in the provinces, we are trying to do something like around about 400 professional education staff. So if we often say the education system has 360,000 educators, 400 people in total, those are the people in the provinces and running the schools and so forth. What we are reporting on and what national is doing around about 400 professional educators. On the finances, the last part, the pages that have been replaced. In the total system, Honourable Chair, but all. In the total system, the figure is often mentioned, and maybe Mr. Patel will have more accurate information than me, but around 360,000 educators. Now, that would actually mean around about so many posts, because you may still have some additional staff that come in for this or that purpose. And then, of course, you have your administrative staff as well, which will take you to 400,000. And I'm saying again, national then sits with 400 professional educators trying to influence the system. So it's quite a massive task. If we then go to the newly distributed page 55, the 4 pages that I indicated were replaced. It gives a little bit further breakdown, but it's to indicate that on the 2007-08 budget, we did spend 99.1% of the budget. And although there was a 45 million that was underspent, it was not because of ABC sloppy work. It was because of work in progress. That just wasn't completed by 31 March. And to give you but one example, is the second chance grade 12 examination that took place middle of the year, this year. But of course, a lot of work, preparatory work, was done by 31 March, but the actual exam only took place later. Therefore, the part of money to administer the actual exam had to be rolled over. Those kinds of things. There are some reasons given there on page 57 and 58, and let me leave it at that and wrap up on the chapter. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that comprehensive. I think I must throw in these rules from, if Bernard knows about them anyway, this is not rules yesterday. I've told them in this cafe so that when we are, I'm going to allow my members to ask questions before I come to my. This relating particular to space, which kind of frustrating them, so much that they even end up with qualifications. the first one it has to do with the registration of in their database they don't know what to what subject, what number, what is what because and you're saying to us the schools which are supposed to be registering teachers to be members of state are not being that. Therefore many of the teachers out there are not state members. And our understanding we're saying it's not state who should be going to school. It is school two provinces that employ after recommendation by school government. Like yesterday they went up to say mainly this affects the old teachers that are already existing. It could be the department is wide enough now when they are employees to say, are you a member? But our question was, isn't that? It's not safe that to do that. It should be a simple exercise by the principal in a given school saying to it that all teachers are registered. Because if they are not, it's no use to tell me and say I'm going to deregister. The second concern was, again, it is the reporting of misconduct to that. Again, these things happen in schools. If schools do not respond to SASA, there is no way SASA can be able to deregister. Again, that is an outcry for them saying, we need some formal official system to state that by law, whatever misconduct happens, it should be reported to us. It was an outcry from them. The last one which we could not understand as a committee, when they were saying, we approve budgets, and those budgets, we everybody knows, this is the amount for SASA, for faith, for some reason they were reporting that they are getting their funding late. Because they are getting their funding late, they are unable to do what they are supposed to. We said we're going to throw this to the department so that they think about it. Maybe let me put two questions again that have to do with our risk to structure. It's a nutrition one. We found there that the suppliers are able to interpret veggies in a convenient way so that instead of giving schools fresh vegetables and fresh vegetables, they give them what are those butternut. So you go to eat at every school, when you say veg, it's butternut. So the school, fortunately, the officials that were there, they said in a week or two, they're going to follow that up. Another issue that was of concern, well, it had to do again with the aunties that are sitting. In Bushbuck Ridge, I think they are given 400 rand a month for that test. And they said, what is 400 rand? Can you not buy two loaves of bread? They think that's some kind of concern. Again, that is one issue that they said the officials are saying they are going to take up with the understanding that different provinces do different things. But maybe we do need some national driven police to say we should come to the rescue and assist our aunties who are there. I'll allow my members to come with their questions. I'll come with mine. Another person here.
Chair, first of all, I'd like to congratulate the department with the presentation and particularly for having a clean audit of its finances. This has been year upon year that this has happened, and I think our department deserves the accolades that are due. I think, Chair, the matter that you've raised, and I think that the reports are, these reports have been very good. However, when one goes out, when we go out on these visits to schools and actually go and see what is happening on the ground, then we encounter quite a number of difficulties and challenges that are not necessarily addressed by the sports, and I just want to refer to three of them. The one is the implementation of quintiles, you know, the uniformity of the implementation of those quintiles across the various provinces. And Bushbuck Ridge, which you've mentioned, is probably one of the areas which was first under Limpopo and now under Mpumalanga, where they are encountering that Mpumalanga have implemented the quintile system differently from Limpopo. You know, there is also the question of the non-compliance by provincial heads with regard to the submission of information of the proportion of learners to be in no-fee schools in 2009. And one would like to know how we are dealing with those discrepancies in terms of implementation of quintiles. Just in terms of the performance overview that is contained in the broader report, you know, it does refer, it does indicate that the provision of libraries and science laboratory facilities have been achieved in fewer schools than originally planned, and one would like to get a response on that. And then there is the question of overcrowding in schools, which we have regularly encountered on our oversight visits in these provinces. If we could also just get a response in terms of dealing with such overcrowding. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, perhaps Bushbuck Ridge shocked a lot of us when I visited there. And I would like to go to page 21. It is in the case that the department is collaborating with other departments. In terms of infrastructure policy. Now, some schools in that area do not have water at all. And that's very poor sanitation. And really, this is very shocking. I would like to know whether the department is aware of the situation and what is actually being done. I'm happy that Prof. alluded to the nutrition, also relating to the structure. But also just as a comment to say that, if, you know, maybe I should throw this question to you, Prof. Have those officials called back to you and promised, but they have said that they were going to inform them.
Send me to come.
Do come. Send me down. But the chief is just in front and she will follow. And then also regarding district development, I think I'm right to say that at some point the department has reported to us that there was a draft policy in the pipeline, and then subsequently it was put on hold for some reason. Now, how is the department dealing at this point with the process of coordinating one?
Yes, yes. Thank you. Can I just fire with this question, first of all? done with my luggage. Right, the third question, Chair, or remains, no? I'm going back to Honor Roll now. See if I have a question on the office code. One gets the impression that the initial norms for classification of schools was just wrong. Because you get schools, no, adjacent to each other. One is no quintal 2, the other one is quintal 3. No. And for practical purposes, most of the black schools should be 1, 2, well, perhaps 3. No. Because schools cannot be classified in quintal business in terms of geographical location. The essence is, can the parents afford to pay? In other words, even if a child is a Glenheim, the parent should not be paying if he is destitute. Now, I read here, you know, you are talking about some quintal 3 schools, you know, are now no free schools. You know. How was that determined? You know? Why not all? You know? Why others and so on? Finance and so on. Okay. Second one quickly. The issue of bursaries. This thing, you know, we raised yesterday. We appreciate that you started funding FETs to the tune of 66 million. It's good for a start.
100.
Baba?
100 million.
Okay, 100 million. Okay. It's good for a start. But certainly that has got to be increased significantly. No. I say so because if you compare with the funding for higher education, it's a tenth or less. No. And yes, that's where the trust should be for economic transformation. No. Because I believe, you know, FETs will kickstart the economy much better than universities. And indeed, you know, even the enrollment figures, we've got to put more effort then. And these things won't come overnight. Something must be done. It simply means a stronger advocacy, which I didn't get, you know, from your annual report in schools. How do you get that advocacy? Can I make a suggestion? Let us strengthen, you know, life orientation, the aspect of vocational guidance. And this thing should be stressed from grade 10 to 12, you know, so that the kids internalize, you know, that higher education is not just tertiary education. I'm also raising this in view because the dropout rate, you know, in higher education, you know, is painfully high. You know, a point that our children, many of them, who they're being prepared because of the legacy of the past to a certain extent. I move on quickly, you know, to the third question. You are telling us that you are finalizing, you know, inclusive education. You see, in this country, we are very ambitious. We come with nice policies and so on. That's why we're going to host, you know, World Soccer, you know, with hardly a proper team, you know, because of our big ambition. Now, it's nice to talk about inclusive education. Are those teachers adequately trained? That's what I want to know. You know, has there been training? Because you can't just dump a child who's semi-blind into a school or deaf and so on. Without the support to the child and also proper training to the teacher. Perhaps we'll elaborate on these things and respond. I'm happy that you are saying we are beginning to implement, or we're in the process of implementing the no-fee schools, how that money is used. You get to a school, you know, it's quintal one, but you see broken windows. When a child is funded to the tune of 500 to 600 million, then I wonder what's happening to the money. Now, the last question quickly, no. It relates, no, to, you have indicated that the department is busy training of examiners. No. It creates some doubts in me about what's happening now. The department is training examiners. One would think that the examiners would be independent people. No. That perhaps the people, because I didn't understand correctly, would be the quality control people. What we call them, quality assurance, MALUC and so on. who would be the key figures in that. I'm raising this thing because presently, perhaps for the foreseeable future, we attach a lot of value to the matric certificate. But a lot of commercial value, academic value, and so on. So it must have a lot of integrity. We should not cut out that the department is evaluating itself by training of its own examiners. And one would like to know what are the criteria of choosing this examiner to maintain the integrity of that certificate. Related to that is the issue of criteria of how do we select Naledi schools. When you do work on the ground, School X is a Naledi school, 4 kilos away is a high school, reasonably doing well, no? And it's not a Naledi school, because if we don't get proper answers, then create the impression of education. No. Now, last fundamental question. When are we going to have the turnaround in performance of our children in systematic evaluation, literacy, numeracy, and so on? This thing baffles me. 14 years down the line, we are still being beaten by the poorest countries, Mozambique, and so on. Is there a program of action? You know, I know education is not just an event, it's a process. Where you see, we see ourselves that the average child should be doing about 50%. Or at least 45%, whatever the benchmark would create. Thank you, Chair. Sorry for asking so many questions.
I don't have.
Yeah, you're
welcome, Dr.
Bernard. Thank you, Prof. I also missed my colleagues. May I start off by actually congratulating my colleague, Honorable Andre Gum, for having been promoted to the Deputy Ministry of Education in his absence. Now I got questions. Oh, thank you very much. When we visited schools, when we did oversight, we have actually experienced that grade R programs are actually handled in certain schools. Children are actually accommodated in schools, normal schools, without any form of planning. No desk for these children, no water, they can't wash their hands before they eat, if they ever eat. They don't have places to play, they don't have mats to sleep, because during the day when they are tired, they have to sleep. Now these children are sitting right on the cement floor without a carpet. And they are so dirty, you can see the parents are not even bothering washing their clothes anymore. Because they roll, they sleep on the floor, which is very dusty. And the essence of moving children, grade R programs, from backyards and tin houses and garages, is to expose them to better facilities. But this is not the case at all, it's even worse. There are no books, there's no chalkboard where teachers can write. These children are just actually warehoused there, and then later during the course of the day, they go home. Now, the question here is, are we going to see, in the near future perhaps, independent grade R schools with professional teachers who are paid better salaries because then they shall have been trained? And are we going to see these grade R schools being licensed in order to prevent the mushrooming of them all over the show, so that these children can actually get all the facilities that they are supposed to be getting? Number two,
The provision of books to Dinaledi School seems to be taking priority over any other school that does not fall within the enclosure of Dinaledi School. I want to find out here, because when the presentation was done, it was Dinaledi, 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 and no talk about schools that are not Dinaledi. Are books not actually being given to Dinaledi schools at the expense of other schools that also need such services but are not Dinaledi schools? Question number three, about crime at schools. I want to know what practical plans are there in place to deal with crime at schools, rather than just having theories on paper and saying we've done this and this and this. We still cannot actually prevent crime or stop crime at schools. We need practical, hard plan to deal with crimes in schools. You know, I've been to schools where computers were delivered last month, and before children could use them, they already taken all of them. And that's a lot of money that department has spent on buying computers. Not, I'm talking not only one school, so many schools. Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe let me add on that question by Dr. Masala on distant districts. I'm just trying to share the computer and I don't know how far true it is. There is a perception in the Eastern Cape that those inspectors, CDOs, in that province are paid less than in other provinces. While understanding the functioning, the number, that is, you know, a cheater is a cheater. If you are anywhere, you get the things that, is it true that these CDOs have started as advisors in different provinces? On page 27 and 44, there is one concept in education that Yedu wants. It is this term called ECD. I never know what it means. And I think I've been saying this now for a long time. I do not know how it can be sorted out somewhere. In page 27, when I say ECD, it's a 5-year-old field. That's a great art. When you say ECD, Internal Development, they say 0 to 4. If you go to page 44 of the document, you find that it is dealing with ECD, GEC, SET. Is grade R not part of G? It has to fall outside. Because if it falls outside, I'm deliberately trying to say how I wish the Department of Education can take this so that we're not confused. Either we don't use it from grade R on, or if we're using it, we interpret it so that we read from the same page. There was a constant reference to this figure, which is assisting and not assisting sometimes. I do not know where they report to which committee, because I'm interested to assist department to be assisted by CETA. In your submissions, you are referring to CETA concept. Where do they report? Which committee? Maybe let me talk to them.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Again, please expect us taking turns in responding to the issues, and I will start by a few things, and specific questions I may even just partially respond to, and other parts will be taken up by some of the other colleagues. I must start with what you raised, Chairperson, that came from Satan's presentation yesterday. I think there's some misunderstanding that we need to, from as a department, clarify with faith. And we surely will do it when we are back home. Faith did say yesterday that they have a problem that some of the old teachers, they said that the education departments in the provinces are very rigorous in checking registration with faith when appointing new teachers. But they were referring to some of the teachers that have been in the system maybe for many years and have possibly not registered with them. I think what we just need to assist states and advise them is that if you are a teacher and you are paid on government salary system, and it's the same system that all departments, which include education, are paid on, the so-called PASOL system, when you are paid on that system, your membership fee is automatically deducted on a monthly basis, and that is full stop. So definitely there is no educator that, even if they're not registered with SAFE, that is not paying their membership fee. But then secondly, I think what we need to assist SAFE with is to say, with that salary deduction comes a list of names and reference numbers, school as a pay point where you are working, and so forth. So what SAFE needs to do is take that list that comes from the system, the complete list of deductions, and compare it with their database. And if they find names that deductions are made for, they know these are teachers in the system, but they are not registered, to just follow up directly with the school or even with a teacher, because you have full details on it there. So we will assist SAFE to follow that through. Saying that, Honourable Chairperson, it just takes me immediately to the third issue raised by you on faith, because Mr. Patel will respond to the issues around misconduct. Saying they're receiving their budget late. Faith's operational budget does not come from the department. It comes from those salary deductions. So they receive it every month on payday. It goes automatically into the account from the PASOL system. What Faith was actually referring to is an amount that they received in this 2007 financial year from the department. And I think it was an amount of something like 2 million, and this year we gave them something like 5 million to assist the department with a teacher, the development of the teacher development framework. So the department needed to buy in expertise to assist it with the development of the framework, and the department for that matter could have gone out on a tender and depending on who was interested, appointed the CPD or a university or what the case may be. As professional body, the department considered it, no, let us direct the task to SAFE to assist that. Now, of course, we did not know that in advance, and therefore the money was not there with SAFE on the 1st of April. It came later after the task was actually directed to them. So I'm not sure why that issue was raised, because there's nothing to do with operational expenditure, which comes as normal salary deductions on every month's pay sheet. Honourable Chairperson, then perhaps just to say one or two things on other things. On the question around libraries and science laboratories and so forth, one of my colleagues may add something, but it is part of what is envisaged with the total kids up program. But again, it's also in a way funds related. And perhaps we must say something on the funding, and again, Mr. Patel may know more than me. But what we often forget is where we come from and where we started in 1994 and 1995. with the system that we took over and in what state the system was. And about 2 or 3 years ago, when we did some research between Mr. Patel and myself and working with National Treasury, we actually said that in 10 years, the first 10 years of our democracy, the total budget for education in real terms grew by something like 1%. In nominal terms, you could see the growth annually, but that's only inflation, which almost meant that 10 years down the line, we were trying to implement all our government policies with the same money we had back in 1994, or then a very little more months ago. And that poses a real challenge. Now, from very hard interaction, especially by Mr. Patel with National Treasury officials and the ministers interaction with the Minister of Finance, we've started to see real growth money coming into the system for the last 2 years. And taking into account, it was very, very difficult to catch up backlog on the one hand, and on the other hand, to manage a system at an acceptable standard with basically the same funds you had in the past. Notwithstanding that, as part of the KIDSA program, and money that has started flowing into the system as from this financial year on the KIDSA program, these are some of the issues that are being addressed, and it's being addressed in more than one way as well. And the minister has also done some considerable work around literacy, around reading toolkits, and all kinds of things. Some of the work being done not because we had money within the system, but because we did a lot of this with donor funds as well, and especially with funds flowing from the Netherlands. But maybe Mr. Patel has something more to say on this issue. Just to respond to the bursaries in FET colleges, it was only 100 million, of which almost 67 million was spent in year one as the implementation year for this kind of assistance to students studying in FET colleges. The amount for this year has doubled. So there's 200 million for this year, and we hope to see even further growth in future. And what we also need to keep in mind is that this is not the only money that comes into FET colleges. FET colleges still receive their normal operational budget via the Provincial Education Department, and we are in constant debate with the provinces to ensure that the amount that is allocated to colleges does not increase due to other factors, because there's two other factors that could actually invite provinces to perhaps direct money to other areas. The one is because there's bursary money coming in, and the bursary money is specifically for these students. And yes, even this year's 200 million is definitely not sufficient. But it's again a foot in the door. It's a starting point that we hope will grow further. The second issue that will take more money to FET colleges, I think I touched on yesterday, is the fact that the recapitalization program is coming to an end this year. But we have negotiated with National Treasury that because the recapitalization project is coming to an end, the money must not come to an end. The money that was spent annually on recapitalization must continue to flow into colleges to accommodate more students, to subsidize them, and so forth. So we trust that will also support us in that regard. Inclusive education, perhaps just to say something there, it is one area that I think for a number of years, due to budget constraints, was one of the unfortunate priority areas that was time and again left behind. Not that the department did not see it as a priority, not that the department did not formally propose it, but in terms of government's financial constraints, everything could not be financed. All priority areas. And sometimes it's also not worthwhile if you can't put
substantial funding into an area, it's also not worthwhile just watering it down to nothing. Almost want to say, if a bread costs 10 rand and you have 10 rand, if you buy one bread and you share the bread between three people, it may make sense. But if you have 10 people and you give them at separate points who don't know each other, and you give them each 1 rand, you're going to feed nobody. And it's almost part of that kind of scenario. Inclusive education has now also been prioritized. In future, yes, we will see money coming in. What was presented, the work that is being done, schools that are being addressed at this stage, is also mainly being done with donor funds at this stage. Donor funds flowing through the national department and us directing the program. Teacher training has taken place. Some of my colleagues may say something more on that. Examiners are independent. Examiners and moderators need to apply for those positions. There's no person that is automatically just appointed. The positions are advertised. They have to apply. So it's a recruitment process that you go through, that you see that you appoint the people with the correct qualifications, with experience, and so forth. Notwithstanding that, it is still necessary to bring them together and to absolutely ensure that they apply the same standards when setting exam papers, when marking exam papers, when moderating exam papers. You can't have a person in one part of the country applying at a different normal standard. As you know, we have moved to where papers are set nationally to ensure that the same standard of paper is written across the country, and the same needs to be ensured in the marking and the moderating of such papers. How do we select Denaleri schools? Mainly the provincial education departments do select them. But it would be very easy if we said we want 500 Dinaleri schools to say which schools have the best results in maths and science in the country, and to go to 500 X Model C schools and say those are the Dinaleri schools. Those schools are still operating, and they may still be operating on very high standards. And even at schools awards, it's identified, and the minister has started the so-called 100 club, where you have 100 children in one school passing that higher grade. That is fine, but you also want to go to your previously disadvantaged schools and say which school with minimum facilities have actually been doing good. And if you go to a school, for example, in Limpopo, to Mbilwe school there, that's had 100% pass rate in math for the last 10 years, and it's really a disadvantaged school. And you can now say, let me take that school and uplift it to a Denaleri school, and let me assist that school with some additional facilities and so forth. The issue was raised whether all schools must not be textbooks. Yes, it's a provincial competency, and a lot of money is being spent on LTSM. In this specific year under review, more than 3 billion rand was spent on LTSM, and in fact, we're looking at ways on how you can possibly cut down on those costs with better provision by being more efficient. But notwithstanding that, it's just to go and visit those schools and to go and ensure that they do have all the facilities, that they do have all the textbooks, and so forth, within the limited resources available to the national department. Again, I'm saying provincial competency, the money for running of schools is with provinces. But at national level, if we can find through a donor some money in this area or that area, we gladly then still go and support as far as we can. Mr. Patel used to the measurements of schools. Just something, perhaps one of the last few things from my side on Grade R, Honourable Chairperson. Again, you must see it in terms of the bigger picture, that the system that we inherited does not have this Grade R.
And to say we want grade R as a pre-grade 1 year is very important for the exposure of the child and bringing the child into the school system. There are a number of challenges around that. We knew, first of all, if every primary school is going to have a grade R class, the question is there infrastructure for that? Do we have to go and build an extra classroom or two or three classrooms in every school? Or how do we manage that? It's part of a process. But we need to be very clear that in our department, we're responsible for grade R as the five-year-old, so the reception year before going to grade 1. The ECD part that speaks to below the five-year-old, that is the responsibility of social development. And it's not to say that we do not interact with them or even assist them with their caretakers and training programs, curriculum around the caretaker responsibility. We do interact, but it's not a responsibility of our department as such. It is a responsibility of social development. Perhaps the last thing on grade R while I'm looking at the next issue, crossed my mind. It was mentioned by the honourable member that you visit the school and you find no facilities. It's something that actually pierces the minister's heart. And how many times she said, yeah, I'm walking to a grade R classroom, I see no pictures against the wall, I see nothing. It is a challenge. It is a challenge that we need to address. It's one of the areas that fortunately some additional funding is coming forth now, because I'm saying again, when we sort of started with this grade R, it was with inexistent funding, and you do need resources for that area as well, which is now starting to happen. Let me leave it here and hand over to Mr. Patel. Thank you.
I'm getting worried what you're saying. Sorry, that's something that will happen when it happens. Because there are no funds, nothing. Because I thought it was a policy of the department to take grade R to be part of it, which therefore means if there is no funding, we need to be planning and tapping and saying, when are we going to have that? And when we do have that, because it's no longer a base school. When we talk about the first 10 years, comparable years, now I think it's grade R to grade 9. And we say we cannot leave those kids, because when they are under social development, under those other community schools, they become play schools. Teachers not taught change, you know. So I'm uncomfortable when you are taking this. This is, let's accept that. We don't have fun. Therefore.
Honorable Chairperson, I think Mr. Patel will assist me here. You know, accountants are often bad with words. 2 and 2 is 4, and it's very easy to say 4 and it's finished. When you have to start to explain 4.5 or 3.5, you run out of words. But you are right with your assumption, and I think I just expressed myself extremely badly. It is definitely in the plans, and I did say money is starting to flow in for that purpose. It is challenging, however, to address all the backlogs again, as with the many other backlogs in the system.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, let me start with that particular one around the issue of grade R, ECD, and GET. Firstly, let me just indicate that early childhood development is a conceptual framework around dealing with children and the development from 0 to 9. So it's not about institutional basis of where it needs to particularly work. In other words, the foundations around early childhood development from 0 to 9. So that is something that we embrace and we understand and we accept that it's got to be done in an integrated way, number one. Now, where it articulates itself, now if you look at a 9-year-old learner, a 9-year-old of learners should be in grade 3 or something like that. Grade 3 is a part of the general education system then, and it happens in schools. So the concept of early childhood development, while it can be delivered in different places, needs to be kept holistically. Then the other part of it, so general education is from grade 1 to grade 12. We then have grade R, which is universal in terms of the white paper to deliver to 2010. It is the total and sole responsibility of the Department of Education. And then the part that falls before grade R is the one that you spoke about around social development. Now clearly the question needs to be there, that if the conceptual framework is around ECD, should the provisioning be split in the way that it is? And it's a question that I think that we need to take on further as we move on. It may just be that in the way school nutrition was first considered a health issue was now moved to education because it needed to be integrated in the learning process. The question around whether we take responsibility for grade R, yes, we do in terms of the white paper. Secondly, as I indicated, we have made progress. Thirdly, the issue is that in terms of the funding norms that have now been approved, they begin to set out that framework of identification and the targeting of grade R. So provinces have the norms and standards. The issue we're saying that the first target should be poor areas, and secondly, it should be where you immediately have facilities. So if there's a poor area and there's facilities, then a grade R needs to be established. We also said in the funding norms that a grade R, even in its conceptualization chair, while grade R is not the issue that you regard as plain, it is also not the formal, very formal and rigid schooling. It is a transition phase between learning while playing to learning while really being in a formal setup. So the white paper also recognizes this, and therefore it says that community sites must be encouraged. That's coming to Member Buenamo's question. Is that community sites in the white paper identified as that the state should provide subsidies to about 15% of community sites. However, we don't have the concept of what is a community site. And so in terms of a legal framework, we've got to make it legal. Now, the funding norm says that a community site must become registered, and that's where we think we bring order into the system, must be registered with the Department of Education as an independent school. So when it goes through a registration process for an independent school, there are particular grounds and criteria that need to be checked. And when those are checked and they satisfy, then a grant can be made to that particular institution. So that, so what we're saying is, honorable member, and this is where we would require the assistance of provinces. We even ask community-based organizations, etc., come forward. Assist this community site to get registered. I mean, because that is a technical issue that means communities will need capacity. As soon as you get registered, you get recognized, we know where you are, and therefore funds can particularly flow, and there is no intention of formalizing 100% of grade R. It would not be the case. In terms of grade R in public centers, I indicated the issue of targeting. We received this indication that we're going to receive about a considerable amount of funds to be able to build those specialist facilities in schools. Also last year, the MTEF, we've got money allocated for the provision of grade R. So while I try to answer, Chair, your system question, at the same time try to deal with the issues of the targeting issue of grade R. Now, I'm not going to be able to say whether we're going to make the target of 2010. But what we're saying is very close. We've got the resources, and and more effort is required in mobilizing communities, in mobilizing provinces, in mobilizing districts to that. So as a Department of Education, all the policy frameworks are in place and the prioritization has been set. I'll rest there in terms of the great R. Here's my question again, before you move. Because I want to really grasp. On page 27, when you say EPP, you talk about 5 years and 6 years. On page 44, you say EPP, GEP, FEP. And I always have this understanding. When you say EPP, it goes to that 9 years. Which to me, I'm saying it is confusing. And you are now telling me again that when you say GEP, am I to understand you to say, what that comes in? If a kid started, let me say 6, not 5, and 6 was grade R. Grade 1, 8, and 6, 7, 8, 9, at 9 years, he's in grade 3. Am I to learn today that when you say GET, you start in grade 4? And I'm repeating this deliberately again, because while you have this general understanding that ECG goes to 9 years, in our document, it doesn't say that. And even in this document, nowhere in this document can you relate this statement to a 9-year-old. And I'm saying that is confusing.
No, Chair, apologies for that particular confusion. You're absolutely right in picking it up. There is an intersection, and therefore I think you're absolutely correct that on page 44, we can't use ECD, GET, and FET as distinct particular subjects. We can't use them as well. GET and FET are distinct. Early childhood development, as I indicated, is a concept 0 to 9. So grade R, grade 1, grade 2, grade 1, grade 2, grade 3, that is, if a child is 9 years old, and that's the norm age for grade 3, would be considered, the foundation phase is considered part of the early childhood development in terms of the concept. So, in other words, you can be, if you are a child that is 0 to 9, you can find yourself in a pre-grade R situation, you can find yourself in a grade R, or you can find yourself in school, where you are now following the general education and training curriculum. So you're correct that they're not mutually exclusive and that we do not specify clearly in terms of defining the concept.
That's why I'm proposing, and I'm thinking about how I wish in education we can confine ourselves to foundation phase and this phase and this phase, and we know what we're talking about. We talk about the foundation phase, we want to talk about great art, talk about great art, and not talk about ECD for our general understanding. So we do know what we're talking about.
Thank you, Chair. And if I now may go back through the list, Member van der Heuvel raised the issue. And the issue was raised by other members around the issue of Quintal, with reference to Pushpak Ridge. Chair, what we must understand and we must accept that the Quintal system is a mathematical construct. Quintal means 5, and Quintal means that if you take any group and you split it up into 5 groups, so you take 10, if there are 10 people in a room and you break them up into 5 groups, there will be 2 per group, equal number. So you can't have a quintile 1 that consists of 70% of the population, and then other quintiles are whatever. Now I know what the member is alluding to. So firstly, it's a mathematical construct. Secondly, it is a tool, and it's a broad tool that when you do macro planning, you have to begin to break groups up into their socioeconomic condition. And you say, if we break them up into 5, yes, we understand that quintile 1, 2, and 3 are almost similar. But quintile 4 and quintile 5 are less poor, and we use the concept less poor. So while we accept that you are going to find, and for example, in the Eastern Cape, you're going to find a school that is predominantly African, that was an ex-deity school, that will fall into quintile 5. Because the issue is, unless we have, in terms of our demographics in the country, if Africans were, in terms of their numbers, you know, in the provinces, 60%, then you could have quintile 1, 2, and 3. And then you could have other socioeconomic groups under quintile 4 and 5. So it is correct. It's a dilemma in terms of that's the way the mathematical construct is. But what we really want to say is let's look at what solutions we have to particularly find. The differentials in terms of the allocations of between quintile 1 and quintile 4 are not very, very steep. It's only quintile 1, if we look at it, that they get only 5% of the resources. Whereas all the other quintile 4 get 75% of the resources. But I understand and I accept that there are going to be schools, and we know of these particular problems. What we have agreed to, and I'm reporting on the issue of the 2007 report. So at that stage, the reports were not very much vociferous around this whole issue of quintiles. Now that we're moving to a trajectory of no-fee schools, the quintile issue is getting prominent. And we agree from a policy point of view that we will have to relook at quintiles. And just this week, the Council of Education Ministers looked at the recommendation from the Department of Education that we very seriously look at getting rid of the quintile system. Because firstly, it's a mathematical construct, it's based on mathematical data, and then that data must be cross-checked with what you see on the ground. Now, what then happens is, you can't force the mathematical issues. But on the ground, as you indicated, two schools next to each other, one is quintile 1 and the other one quintile 4, you know, what is particularly happening. The current policy allows that those incidences, honorable member, to be dealt with. And the minister has been at pains to inform MECs and heads of department that if you find those glaring anomalies, here is a township, one school is quintile 1, the other one quintile 3, then reorganize that particular list. However, we're finding that it's quite difficult. So one of the proposals is that we should only use the ability of the community to pay school fees to determine it. So if there is no potential to collect school fees, then that school needs to be considered to be fully funded by the state. And we are now finding, quite interestingly, schools that are classified in quintile 2 and quintile 3 that are now saying that we've been incorrectly classified. They kept quiet all the time, but now they say we're incorrectly classified. We should not be no-fee school. We need to, because we've got enough money in the community to be able to deal with it. So we agreed that as a policy instrument, it serves us over a particular time, but now the issue of the quintile system is part of self-identity, not only because of no-fee schools, but also because of the policy that as we're moving towards totally free education for the poor, and in fact for most of our schools, that we need to begin to look at. I'm not aware, and it shouldn't have happened, that schools between Mpumalanga and Limpopo, when they moved from one province to the other, should have been classified differently. Because we went in 2008, I would have accepted it and understood it, if it happened prior to 2006. Because prior to 2006, remember the quintile was a provincial quintile. And then with the amendments to the Schools Act, we went to national quintile. So whether you are quintile 1 in province A or in province B, you should have been in the same issue. What my guess is that in the transition, and if this is a problem of the demarcation, in the transition, what has happened is that the funding to one of the provinces was not there at that level. And that was a transitional matter that had to be particularly dealt with. But if we do get those particular cases, we look at it. Member Van der Heuvel also raised the issue of non-compliance by HOD of no-fee schools quintile 3. I'm not too sure where the member is getting that quote from. But at the moment, the minister has gazetted Quintal 1s and Quintal 2s as Delphi schools, and we have not moved on to Quintal 3. And the reason that we have not moved on to Quintal 3 is not so much of non-compliance, it's the issue of non-availability of funds. Because in order for Quintal 3s to become Delphi schools, we can't just declare them Delphi schools. Theoretically, in terms of the law and in terms of the funding norms, we could have. But again, it would have been a technical exercise. If there was a school in 2007 receiving the 600 rand and they were fee-paying school, and now in 2008 you declare them at the same allocation, just CPIS adjusted, a no-fee school, the issue is that you're making that school worse off. And so we then went to Treasury to say, in order for us to move to Quintal 3, we need to increase the allocation. So currently, your Quintal 3 school is getting 600. We say, can they get 750 rand per learner, and then they be declared Delphi school, so that they have that additional money that they are supposed to have. So, also, I just wanted to ask Honourable Member to clarify the issue of science facilities and libraries that they were not able to be delivered. And the CFO did explain partly the issue, but what I can say is that generally around the infrastructure, here we must accept and need a report told on this, that we've made progress since 1994, but we've made very slow progress. In other words, with the funds that have been allocated, we've delivered. So in terms of the report, whatever we have as a department, or provincial education department, we've delivered. The reality is that the problem is quite large and huge, and NIMS have shown it, that while we made progress, the inequalities, the overcrowding, the unacceptable conditions, the lack of water, etc., still remain. In terms of the water situation, the schools that you referred to, Pumulanga, we won't mind having the names, etc., and we can follow it up. But the issue is that there are still schools without water. There are schools without water. Because the dwarf program in the provision of water is a 3-year MTF program. It was both in health, that to deal with clinics, and it was to deal with sanitation and water in schools. Last year, they gave us very small amounts in terms of education. They dealt with a major portion of the issues in health. This year, 2008, seeing an increase in that, and over this MTEF, there is a plan to eradicate it. But we always understand and accept one school without water is one school too much. Coming back to the infrastructure issue, Chair, is that CMN HEDCOM have now discussed and have done an analysis. We're saying that there's an infrastructure policy, there's norms and standards. We need to, the education sector has to take the leadership in the delivery. That the Department of Education now has to set up an expert unit in order to support provinces in the delivery. And fourthly, we need a decision as a nation. As a nation, we need a decision of how we're going to deal with the infrastructure backlogs in education. Our calculations are it's impossible to deal with that backlog given the current level of funding. Now, we're not saying that we must increase the budget, but we need to find innovative ways. One of the suggestions that CM is looking at a strategy of dealing with it in the next. If we go on with our budget at the current rate, we will not be able to deal with the backlogs even by the year 2050. Even by the year 2050, we will not be able to deal. So the issue is rather than us trying to think that with the funds that we have, we're going to be able to deal with it and trying to make promises that we're going to deal with it. What we have to do is to find out, are there other creative, innovative funding ways? And let's put ourselves a 10-year program. High-level intensity in the DOE and deal with it. Now, those type of proposals are going to be going forward towards cabinet. And as a nation, we have to begin to take that decision. I think Honourable Member Mosala's question around dwarf, etc. I've indicated whether we are aware there are schools that are not covered, but it's in the MTEF that it has to be covered. issue is around risk taking. And we have often told legal departments that the BFMA is not a chain around the neck. It understands what emergencies are, it understands what life threatening situations are. And that if at any point that you are told that the school does not have proper water, even for drinking, then take measures that at least you relieve that human misery immediately. And this is the message that needs to go out. If the issue is if a school doesn't have water, get a taxi. We have water in bottles, get water in bottles then. But let's do something about that particular issue. But in terms of a system plan, system plans take some time. I addressed the issue of no-fee schools with the district policy. Yeah. The district